himself. It feels like she slapped me. He shouldn't be able to. We'll make sure to have Imperial guards in any treatment room with him in it from now on, the beauty minister adds. We'd rather not turn this into a scandal, the queen says. If the newsies got wind of it, she shakes her head and sighs. We've paid the attending servants in your apartments for their discretion. So you want me to lie about it? I grit my teeth. No, that isn't the case, the beauty minister says. Just be discreet, the queen adds. I want to see Prince Alfred embarrassed. I want to see Prince Alfred lose his adoring flock of females. I want to see the kingdom ostracize him. He will be sent away, banished to the Gold Isles, the Minister of Law declares. He should be put into a starvation box, I say. The Minister of Law clears his throat and loosens his cravat. If that is what you wish, the Queen says. Her answer takes me by surprise. It is. Very well, then. The Queen motions to the Minister of Law. William, see to it that the first few days of Alfred's banishment to the Gold Isles are spent in a starvation box. Make it a little too snug for him. I'm tired of his antics. She gives me a grim look. But, Your Majesty, don't you think it's a bit harsh? The Minister of Law says. Not at all. Bells are not toys to be played with or abused, she says. The Minister of Law opens his mouth to protest further. I'd like time with Camellia alone. She turns to the beauty minister and the Minister of Law. If you would excuse us for a few moments. The beauty minister squeezes my shoulder before leaving the room. Have you made a decision about my request, Camellia? The queen asks as soon as the door closes. I fuss with the rim of the teacup. The bruise on my cheek still throbs. I believe you've had an opportunity to witness just how wild Sophia can be. I saw her handiwork with one of the Pompadour twins. And I take it she's shown you her portraits? Her obsessions? Yes, I say. I take full responsibility for her actions. The queen reaches to her side and lifts an album. She shows me sketches of Sophia as a child with Charlotte. She misses her sister. The illness has taken a toll on all of us. The queen circles their faces with her fingers. I apologize for anything she might have done to hurt you. She's just broken. She takes my hand and looks me in the eye. Her fingers feel frail and bony like Maman's did. The wrinkles around her eyes have deepened. She cannot be queen. What is your answer? Will you help Charlotte now? The declaration ceremony is coming swiftly in 3 days' time. She coughs. Attendants rush to bring her chafing dish closer. They hold it near her until her coughing subsides. I don't want to disappoint the queen. I don't want to tell her no. I don't want to admit that I may not be able to help Princess Charlotte. I haven't found the answer yet. I still have 3 days to decide, right? Yes, that's correct. I figured since you saw for yourself why Sophia is unfit, you'd be ready to help. I did, but I need more time. That is fair, she replies. Camellia, would you do me a favor before you go?
Yes, Your Majesty.
Freshen my face up a bit so I don't look so sick. The world will soon find out, but I'd like a little more time. Just as you do.
Should we go to your treatment salon?
No, no, do it here.
She pats my arm.
I don't have the strength.
I wonder if I can add youth to the Queen's organs so she can live forever and Sophia will never have to become Regent Queen. I could help you reverse some of this. Maybe you could rule for years more. Then Sophia won't have to be queen at all. Or at least, we could give her time to grow into it. The Queen's mouth pulls upward.
Yes, you could, but I don't want it. Plus, one could have young organs but still be sick. Illness cares nothing of age. One of my newest beauty laws will forbid the practice entirely. When my sunset comes, I'll be at peace with it. We all should be. But, and I don't think Sophia will ever grow into it. Some people can change, while others can't. They're just insects stuck in amber.
She touches my cheek.
Just take a few of the wrinkles away. Make my skin a little darker and richer, like molasses. The sicker I get, the more the grey seeps to the surface and spoils the colour, it seems.
An attendant serves her a cup of Belrose tea in the most beautiful garnet red porcelain cup. Is there bay powder available? I ask one of the servants. A lovely cass is placed on the table between us.
Leave us,
the Queen tells the attendants. She finishes the cup of tea and sinks back along her chaise. Her eyes close and her breath is soft. We are alone again. I close my eyes and picture her face. My pulse accelerates to the beat of her unsteady heart rhythm and the slow chugging of her blood moving through her veins. I use the Age Arcana to smooth the deep crevices around her eyes, like rubbing a wet finger across dried-out dough. I deepen the brown of her skin. The Queen's light snores and wheezes fill the room. While she rests, I slip my mirror from inside my dress. I take a pin from the cass and stick my finger. The seed of blood climbs through the mirror's ridges. The roses twist and reveal their message. Blood for truth. A fog appears in the glass and then clears. I study her true reflection. The deeply wrinkled face of a sleeping woman looks back at me, alongside her grace, fragility, and her sadness. Tears streak her cheeks, following the deep creases in her skin. The Queen's image holds all the weight of her title and the worries she carries. I feel them all like heavy bags. I slip the necklace back down the front of my dress. Her eyes snap open.
Please help Charlotte, she says. You have 3 days until I need an answer. Until it's too late.
She squeezes my hand.
I felt like the answer you were about to give me wasn't what I wanted to hear. Please, Camille. Don't make me replace you too.
My hands freeze. Her eyes close before I can answer her.
It's time to leave, Lady Camellia, her attendant says.
I stand and leave the room, quiet as a mouse, the Queen's threat stinging like a fresh cut. 41. The next day, the fashion minister waits in the main salon for me after my first beauty appointment.
Well, good morning, little doll.
What are you doing here? Have more dresses for me? I kiss both of his powdered cheeks.
No, and aren't you spoiled?
He takes my hand.
Today you are coming with me and the princess to the dress bazaar.
But I have more appointments. I point to the wall ledger.
And this is your most important one. We have yet to find a suitable fabric for her wedding gown. Nothing compares to the look you created. She says she needs you there, and future queens get what they want. Or have you not learned?
He waves the latest scandal sheet at me.
Come along, he says, sensing my hesitation. You never know what mischief one can get into. You might have fun. The Trianon Dress Bazaar is the largest in all of Orléans.
Hearing the full name strikes something in my memory. A sign from the carriage ride on my first night as an official belle. The Trianon Dress Bazaar. Isn't that near the Chrysanthemum Tea House?
Why, yes, it is,
the minister says, and winks as if he knows what I'm thinking.
Amber.
I race to get dressed. The minister smiles.
Now that's more like it.
After lunch, we ride in a procession past the royal hourglass. It wears a coat of ice and snow, its diamond-like sand swirling inside like an impending storm.
Morty,
the fashion minister orders the carriage servants. Bree stokes the small fire and places more pots of tea on the iron rack. This is the largest carriage I've ever been in, like three regular-sized ones put together. I press my nose to the window. Sophia's royal carriage glitters like a sun ahead of us. My breath makes tiny flat clouds across the glass. A plan to slip away and see my sister buzzes through me, alongside my ever-present fear and panic. Remy sits beside me on high alert, as if he can sense I'm up to something. I laugh and join the conversation, hoping to quell his suspicions. We pass through the market courtier. Blue lanterns fight the wind, clutching the hooks above their stalls. Vendors stand before their pavilions and shops, hawking their wares.
Silkworms, finest quality! Cravats that change colour! Best brocades in the kingdom!
Glass beads from Savoy! This colour is made for you!
Dresses that light up the night!
Shoppers carry heat lanterns over their heads like parasols to keep warm. They drift over high hair towers and hats like tiny stars tied to ribbons. The carriages snake through the narrow passageways as they enter the garden courtier. The stores are piled on top of each other like gift boxes in all the colours of the rainbow. Emerald lanterns shine above doors and inside windows. Golden lifts and spiral staircases take passengers up to the highest stores. Some are hidden by the thickening white clouds. I spot the chrysanthemum tea house in the distance, its turrets shining like the wings of bright Bayou fireflies in the dark of night. The carriages park. We step out onto the street. Sophia's ladies ooh and ah at the sights.
Isn't it beautiful?
Sophia says to me. Yes, Your Highness. I paint on a smile. She hands me a heat lantern. Its warmth heats my bell bun. Part of me wishes it could lift me away into the clouds. Imperial guards clear the shop Sophia chooses to visit. Prima's Petticoat Palace, Gascon and Duhart's Fichu Forge, Lady Cromer's Brocade Bonanza. The fashion minister guides her through the complex vertical network of stores. Gabrielle, Claudine, and Henrietta Marie saunter behind her. People bow and shout wedding blessings. Newsies sketch pictures and swarm us with gossip post balloons. The fashion minister's dandies comment on the best shops to visit, where to get the richest silk, which shopkeeper gives customers the best quality champagne, what dressmakers have the keenest eye, which of the owners are favoured by the Queen and the fashion minister himself. We take one of the golden lifts up. The glass windows boast advertisements, vivant dresses that shift colour every 10 seconds, cravats that release cologne so a man always smells his best, matching outfits for teacup pets and their owners, hats and headdresses as tall as the ceiling, lace shoes that jingle pleasant tunes. I try to imagine when I will be able to slip away. With 7 guards around us and Remy behind me, it's going to be difficult. My head rattles with possible escapes. Maybe I can accompany Sophia into a dressing room and slip out a back exit? Maybe I can use the commode and sneak out through a window. I try to keep track of the staircases, lifts, and shop names, but the corridors twist and turn with no orderly pattern. It's a maze. Sophia volleys in and out of several shops. Tailors, dressmakers, and merchants try to woo her with free gifts for her ladies, or offer pastries and champagne. The princess's voice drifts down the passageways as she speaks with the fashion minister and her ladies.
What do you think of this fabric? I can't decide, Gustave. Beadwork or not?
Sleeves or no?
I haven't liked anything you've showed me, Gustave. You're the fashion minister. Find me something the world hasn't seen yet.
I slow my pace between the sets of guards and glance into a nearby shop called Charette and Soie before we're rushed along. It's lined with shelves of twinkling apothecary bottles, and smaller tables hold even more. They contain animated dyes for vivant fabrics. The jewel tones shift from ocean blues to cobalts and magentas, from crimson reds to sunflower yellows. Others change from pastel pinks to sky blues to lemony creams. It would take several days to examine each one, to watch for each color. There are thousands of them.
"Finest silkworms in the whole bazaar," the owner says, motioning at the opposite wall.
Live silkworms stretch across gently turning rods. Silk eases from their bodies onto a spoke wheel.
"Perfect for any dress. Can be dyed with animated ink."
I nod my appreciation as I glance around for an exit.
"Camellia!"
Remy rushes me along to rejoin the tail end of the royal group, and I lose my chance. In the next shop, I stand alongside Sophia and her ladies while vendors parade around her with fabrics and dress samples. Again, I search for exits. There are two, the entrance we came through, and a door in the back.
"I don't know about this dress,"
Sophia examines a gown Gabrielle holds out for her.
"But it could be the start of something. It would have to be altered, of course."
"Try it on," Gabrielle urges. "Let's just see the cut to find a starting place."
"Yes," Claudine adds. "You won't know until you see how it fits."
"Wait, wait. I want Camellia's opinion on all of this. She's been awfully quiet,"
Sophia says. Her ladies chuckle and hide whispers behind fans.
"What would you choose if you were going to get married?" she asks me.
"I can't even conceive of the thought, Your Highness," I reply.
"Of course you can. Weren't you with one of my suitors the other day?"
The left side of her mouth curls up. A cold stone drops into my stomach. "He interrupted me. I did not welcome his company," I lie. "I find him to be insufferable and cocky."
"Is that so?"
she says. "Yes. I'm grateful I never have to marry." My answer seems sufficient.
"Well, if you did, what kind of dress would you wear?"
She stares straight into my eyes, as if she's searching for the answer somewhere deep down inside me. I don't think of my preferences, but of Sophia's. How she changes her look almost daily. How she detests the idea of choosing one royal appearance for life. I would consider a dress that would change throughout the ceremony and reception. Not just in colour, but in shape. Something that will morph into all your favourite dress cuts. A ball gown for the ceremony, a slim silhouette for the receiving line, a flounced skirt for dancing, but without you ever having to leave the party. Sophia's eyes widen.
"Do you think it's possible?"
"It could be. We could work with animated ink and experiment with silkworms," I say. Sophia winks at me.
"You know how much I love to test things. I knew I wanted you around for a reason."
She steps behind a screen. Her attendant prepares to dress Sophia by removing her coat and gloves. Gabrielle lifts the hanger and carries the dress back to her. For a moment there is nothing but bustling and murmured compliments. And then Sophia screams. The sound pierces through me. Guards rush forward. Remy moves me aside as he helps to remove the screen. Sophia is crouched on the floor. Attendants flock to her. They rip the gown from her body. Ugly hives and burns mark her arms and chest. Tears course down her face, taking her makeup with them. Her body is racked with sobs. She suddenly seems so small and vulnerable.
"It's poisoned," someone says.
"I didn't do it," the shopkeeper says. "I swear."
The guards turn to arrest her. She runs off. A few chase her out of the store. Bodies swarm inside. Newsies with post balloons, noisy courtiers, passers-by.
Remy and the remaining guards work to establish order and clear out inquisitive onlookers. Voices ping like sparklers around me. Flurries of hands reach for the princess, trying to comfort her. More guards flood the space.
In the chaos, I let my heat lantern get too close to one of the hanging dresses, and it ignites.
Adding fire to the chaos only draws a greater crowd. Remy whisks me out of the shop.
"Stay here,"
he says. "I will," I lie. The moment he turns to put out the fire, I flee down the winding corridor. I fight through the crowd to get to a set of staircases. I jump down three at a time and almost fall.
"Is this the way out?" I ask someone.
"Yes, three flights down, or the lift is faster, miss."
"Oh, wait, aren't you?"
I don't wait for her to finish. I'm spurred on by fear, trying to apologize as I knock into shoulders and purses and small children. I make my way out of the maze and onto the street. I step out into the path of an approaching rickshaw and wave my hands. The man halts. His fur hat flies forward. A woman snatches the privacy curtain back and screeches at the man and then at me. The woman sitting next to her joins in the barrage of insults until she sees me.
"Viola!"
she slaps the woman's arm.
"Ow!"
Viola says.
"She's the favourite,"
she points.
"No, it isn't. Couldn't possibly be."
She leans forward. Her nose scrunches as she inspects me.
"Oh, my!"
She clutches her large bosom.
"Are you going to the tea house?" I ask. "Can I have a ride? I promise to give you both a beauty token for your troubles."
"We aren't, but we'll take you there. Get in!"
She waves me forward.
"Help her!"
she hollers at the driver.
"I can get in myself."
I gather up my long skirts, step up on the footstep, and slide between the two women. The squeeze is tight. The man races forward.
"What were you doing, Lady Camellia?"
one asks.
"Yes, where is your carriage, my lady?"
the other asks. "I got lost inside the garden courtier," I lie.
"Well, that's easy to do. It's quite a mess. All those stores scattered here and there and on top of one another like a messy closet of hat boxes."
"Yes, it was my first time," I say.
"Not to worry," one says. "We've rescued you, the loveliest of favourites."
The women tell me all about the card game they're about to attend in the city of Vere. They kiss my cheeks and hold my hand and tell me how they won money in the kingdom's lotteries by betting on me to be named the favourite. The rickshaw pulls up to the chrysanthemum tea house. I press two beauty tokens into their hands and thank them as they whiz away full of laughter. My heart thuds. I pull my jacket closed to block the wind. I avoid the entrance and walk around the side of the tea house to the gardens near the veranda. I take off my coat and throw it up over the small railing, then lift my skirts to climb up. A buzz hums under my skin like the arcana. I duck as servants set the veranda for afternoon tea. I wait until they disappear into the kitchen before darting into the hall. Day lanterns putter overhead. I climb the stairs. Madame Claire's high-pitched voice rings out, so I hide in the nearest room and press my back to the wall.
"Is Ambrosia still resting?"
she complains. "Yes, my lady," an attendant answers. "She always rests for an hour before tea."
"I lose three possible appointments in that time. Who said she could continue to do so?"
"She's slow to rebalance these days." Their voices taper off as they move farther into the house. I inch forward and check the hall, then race up the last set of staircases to my old bedroom on the third floor. I turn the knob and sneak inside. The room is outfitted in deep reds and oranges like a phoenix's feathers. Ambrosia flowers wink and bloom from animated wallpaper. The bed curtains are drawn. I rush forward.
"Amber,"
I whisper. No answer. I say her name again and open the bed curtains. The bed is empty. Disappointment floods every part of me. I'm near tears. On Amber's nightstand sit little mortuary tablets for Maman Iris. What should I do, Maman? I wait for an answer. I run my finger over the mortuary tablets. Search. The word drums through me. I go back to the bedroom door. The noise of the servants in the hallway sends me to the wall. I run my fingers over it, waiting to feel air. Then I push. Bree's old servants' quarters are empty. I slip out and up the servants' staircase. I search every room on this floor, then go to the next and the next until I'm at the very top of the tea house, the 10th floor. Madame Claire's apartments are on the right. Each door is locked but one. As soon as I open the door, the sound of soft crying greets me. The room is pitch black aside from one single day lantern tied to a nearby door hook.
"Who's there?"
a sniffly voice calls out. I untie the lantern and walk forward. "Amber, is that you?" I say. Something metallic drops with a clatter.
"There's no Amber here,"
a second voice cries. The soft light of the day lantern spreads. A girl leans forward. She has one eye and half a nose. I startle and fall backward with a thud. Another girl reaches for me. The light hits her. Hair grows down the left side of her head. Only the left side.
"Help us," she says.
I scurry away from her as more voices join hers like a chorus. 42. The day lantern illuminates the faces of the women. Broken, disfigured, injured. Silver chains loop around their wrists like bracelets, and jeweled collars tether them to high-backed chairs.
"Who are you?" I say.
A parade of names hits me. Kata, Noel, Ava, Charlotte, Violaine, Larue, Elle, Daruma, Ina, Aina, Enna, and Delphine. Her face is seared into my memory. That night she fixed the woman mauled by a teacup bear.
"We are bells too," Delphine says. "Madame keeps us locked up here."
She leans into the light, her eyes aligned with dark shadows.
"What happened to you? How did you get here? I don't remember you at home." "She works us all night."
"The crying," I say.
"We cry because they force us to take appointments until it hurts to use the arcana."
Delphine jerks forward. The chains clatter against the floor.
"Help us."
"Please," another one says.
"Wait."
Delphine puts her hands up.
"Shh."
They all go quiet. The melody of their tense breaths echoes. I release the day lantern. It putters to the middle of the room. We all hear the approaching footsteps.
"Hide,"
Delphine says. I tuck myself behind one of the high-backed chairs and burrow inside thick drapes. I press my back against the wall as flat as can be. The door opens.
"My little darlings,"
Madame Claire coos. Her heels click against the floor as she approaches the floating day lantern. The girls start to whimper and cry.
"It's time to work."
She walks a lap slowly around the room.
"Larue, I think I need you today."
Madame Claire unhooks one of the women. Larue's wails and protests bounce off the walls.
"Please don't ruin my day," Madame Claire says impatiently. "Just come, will you?"
Larue digs her feet into the ground, but Madame Claire drags her like a stubborn teacup dog. The door opens and shuts. I take 5 deep breaths, then leave my hiding space.
"How many of you are here?"
13, I think," Delphine says. "But I can't always be sure. The numbers change. Girls go missing."
"Where did these girls come from?
How can I help them?"
Only one answer comes to mind.
"I have to get you out of here."
"We can figure out the rest later."
"You'll need to get the keys," Delphine says, "from her waist sash."
"You won't be getting anything,"
Madame Claire's voice booms through the room from another entrance. She releases 4 day lanterns, the light so bright it's blinding. The girls scream, the sound cold and sharp. Madame Claire tisks.
"I knew something was wrong when I came in here.
The day lantern wasn't tied to the hook and I could smell you.
Smell me?
They always put lavender in your soap. It's the Queen's preferred scent.
You must let these girls go, I tell her. You can't keep them chained up like this.
Madame Claire laughs.
Oh, but I can. They are in the employ of the Chrysanthemum Tea House.
She turns her back to me.
Guards!
Madame Claire's guard tails me up each flight of palace steps. I wouldn't be able to run again if I wanted to. The Bell apartments whir with activity as palace guards swarm the halls and post balloons whiz in and out. Inside, Remy is pacing. Du Barry is ringing her prayer beads, and Elizabeth has bitten her lips raw. The beauty minister is tapping her foot to an erratic beat, but freezes when I enter.
There you are,
Du Barry hollers. Remy lets out a deep sigh.
I've returned her safely,
Madame Claire tells her sister. Du Barry clutches my shoulders, her red-tipped nails digging into skin and bone.
Where have you been?
Are you all right, little darling?
The beauty minister rescues me from Du Barry's grip and inspects me.
All in one piece?
Yes, I'm fine. I got lost in all the chaos after what happened with Sophia, I lie.
How is she?
I add a thick layer of concern.
She's on the mend, the beauty minister says. Quite scary. You must be rattled.
She lays a hand on my cheek, then motions for a servant. Remy clears his throat. The rumble is deep and cuts through the room.
Madame Minister, let me express my sincerest apologies. Protecting Camellia is my responsibility. I failed you and my queen.
He bows. The beauty minister puts a hand on his shoulder.
You secured the princess. You did what was needed. Plus, it seems our favorite knows just where to go when lost. She ended up in the right hands.
She smiles at Madame Claire.
Now that you're home safe and sound, I take my leave. I need to report this to the Queen and check on Sophia.
She kisses my forehead, leaving behind her deep plum rouge stick colour. Once the doors close, Madame Claire says,
Anna, you've lost control of the favourite. She's been snooping around in my tea house. She found the others.
Du Barry turns to me.
You saw them?
Yes, I saw them. The other bells you keep in the attic.
Du Barry flashes her sister a look of annoyance and purses her lips. With a tilt of her head, she dismisses Elizabeth, who for once goes without an argument.
What's wrong with them? Why does no one know about them?
You should be grateful to them and to us for raising them, and to the other tea house madams for caring for them,
Du Barry says.
Grateful?
She takes a slow sip of tea.
You'd all expire much sooner if it weren't for those girls.
Expire?
You lied to us. Lie? No. I did not tell you things that aren't your business. This is Guardian territory. My duty. But yes, since you've seen them, I suppose there's no use in trying to keep the secret any longer. There are more bells in this world than you knew of. I didn't want you to find out this way. Actually, I never wanted you to find out at all.
She glares at Madame Claire.
They aren't as strong as you, but they are necessary to address the growing needs of the kingdom.
Why didn't you tell us? What did you do to them?
Caring for bells is an imprecise art, Camellia. You will one day see, when you return home and raise a daughter of your own. Some turn out whole, beautiful, and obedient, while others are broken and rebellious.
Were they born that way? Or did you work them so much that their arcana couldn't function any more?
Both,
she says. The faces of those bells flicker before my eyes. The faces of my sisters follow. We're all going to wither like flowers on a vine if we work the way they want us to.
She chains them, I point at Madame Claire.
Madame Claire trembles.
Anna, you must understand.
Claire, you will not be entrusted with them if you cannot care for them properly,
DuBarry barks.
But they get unruly.
Find a better way to maintain control and order. Otherwise, I will replace you at that tea house and appoint another. Mother always said you didn't have what it takes.
DuBarry wags a finger at Madame Claire, then sighs.
I'm sorry you saw that, Camille. It's not customary, but you must understand.
I will never understand, I spit.
One day, with wisdom and age, you'll see that I've done what was necessary for the survival of the art form. For the goddess. For all of us.
I let out a guttural scream. DuBarry laughs. She snaps an order at a servant who produces a stack of newspapers. DuBarry reads aloud.
Princess Sophia almost killed with a poisoned gown. Beauty work surging to a new high, rumoured to be a bigger expense for households than food. Owner of Gerald's gowns not cooperating with the Queen's guard. A plot against the princess foiled. The regent heir still lives. The favourite chooses a new wedding look for the princess. Do you know which of these headlines I care about? Rumoured to be a bigger expense for households than food. Can you imagine?
She tosses the papers aside.
Spintria and Lise and the longevity of Maison Rouge de la Beauté and Orléans. That is what I care about. To do my mother's and grandmother's and great-grandmother's work. The tea houses will continue to run as they always have, with order, grace, and dignity. There will be a favoured set of bells and a secondary set to ensure that the needs of the kingdom are met. Basic supply and demand. That is the way it's always been. And I hope I will be able to have even more bells. In my mother's time, there were 100 per generation. I haven't gotten as lucky, but I will change that soon. The god of luck will bless me as I do this divine work.
I seethe with anger.
And if you or anyone else gets in the way of that, you will be repurposed, she threatens haughtily. Now go to your bedroom. The nurses are waiting with the leeches. You've had enough excitement for a week. The toxins in your blood must be high. It's what makes you behave this way.
And with that, I am dismissed with a wave of a hand. 43. The next morning, I dress to see the Queen. There are no beauty appointments this week. The declaration festivities start today, and I sent word to Her Majesty that I've made my decision 2 days early. The Queen's gold and white post balloon sits tied to my vanity. The note is pressed flat on the lid of my beauty cas.
Dearest Camellia, I look forward to your decision. Sincerely, H.R.M.
Fireworks illuminate the snowy clouds outside the windows. The Kingdom of Orléans will learn of the Queen's illness and will have an heir announced this week. Either Sophia or an awakened Charlotte. My stomach erupts just like the sparklers in the skies. My angry thoughts hiss and pop like lightning. My heart thunders in my chest. My hands tremble with rage. Every thought of DuBarry and Madame Claire and the other bells and my mother's bell book sends another surge through me. Tighter, I tell Brie as she ties my waist sash. I have to keep it all in.
Where do you think you're going? Elizabeth strides through my bedroom entry with her arms crossed and her signature pinched expression.
Ivy and I have an important meeting with the Queen.
Ivy has been sent home.
My heart plummets. Why?
My mother doesn't like the influence she has over you. And I agree. I never really liked Ivy either. She wasn't very nice.
Where is she? I rush out to the hall and head off in the direction of Ivy's bedroom.
She's already gone.
I pivot to face her. Elizabeth has a smug grin on her face.
Why wouldn't you let me say goodbye to her? So she can tell you to escape again, or so you two can attempt to go together. Oh, yes, my mother knows Ivy told you to run, and the fact that you did, to the chrysanthemum tea house, disappointed her even more. She thought you wanted to be the favourite so badly. I open my mouth to lie. The sense of dread wraps itself around me. There isn't a private place in these apartments. They could know everything I've ever discussed with Ivy or Bree. Don't even try it, she waves her hand at me. But Ivy will be punished for it, as she should be, meddling in our business and making things more difficult. She didn't meddle. She warned me. That was not her purpose. That's not what big sisters are supposed to do. She was supposed to prepare you. She did, I yell. Soiled you is more like it. And you better get back to work before Mother sends you home too. Remy and I walk to the Queen's chambers. His strides are heavy blows against the floor. Are you still angry with me? I ask. He steps ahead of me. His jaw clenches.
This way.
I'll take that as a yes. He turns a sharp left. I needed to see my sister. Surely you understand that.
I don't understand many things about you, or your choices, he says.
Two guards and an attendant step into our path.
Lady Camellia, the attendant bows and presents a rose petal pink post balloon.
Sophia.
You've been requested by Her Highness the Princess.
I am headed to see the Queen. She thrusts the post balloon's tails into my hands. I open the back of the balloon and remove the letter from its compartment. I open the privacy casing.
Your presence is requested by Her Royal Highness Princess Sophia in her tea pavilion immediately. My mother says you can come see her afterward.
I glance at Remy. He glares straight ahead. Does she know the reason I'm meeting with the Queen?
You are to come now.
In the gardens, a tea pavilion shimmers, a thick fur-white canopy draped over a beautiful low table, set with flowers, pastel teacups, and flickering candles. A cold wind loosens the curls from my bell bun as Remy and I follow the attendant, weaving through the maze of winter shrubbery. A shiver races across my skin, and I'm not sure if it's a reminder that more snow is to come, or if it's because anger rattles every part of me. Sophia's ladies of honour sit on plush cushions and feast on petit foods. Heat lanterns float overhead, casting a copper glow and warming the inside of the tent. The attendant announces me.
May I present Lady Camellia, the favourite, she says with a curtsy.
I bow my head, then look up and spot Auguste sitting to the left of the princess, feeding her grapes one by one. The sight of him makes my breath catch. He winks.
How are you feeling, Your Highness? I pretend to show concern. Much better. The rash is gone. The poison is out of me. I'm back to feeling like myself.
And now you're ready to play, Auguste adds, which makes her giggle.
I am.
She feeds her teacup elephant Zoe a carrot and pets her head.
Come sit. We're having a debate.
If it weren't for the Royal Orleans emblem hanging around her neck, she'd be unrecognizable. Her hair is like Hannah's, bone straight, black with golden streaks, and soaring down her back. I stare for a second too long.
Don't be jealous, Camellia, she coos. I had to get one final look out of Ivy before she was sent home.
And she knew I preferred brunettes, Auguste adds. Curly hair, it was.
No one cares what you prefer, Auguste Fabry, she says with a laugh. A newsie challenged me to do something different, to not have blonde hair for once. I rise to every challenge given to me.
She fixates on me, waiting for me to meet her gaze.
But don't be jealous. You're still my favourite.
She blows me a kiss.
For now.
She pats a nearby cushion.
Come, sit beside me.
I ease down beside her like I'm getting used to hot water in a bathtub. She gives me a playful shove and I topple over. Gabrielle and Sophia laugh. My cheeks flush and I worry my anger will explode out of me any minute.
Be careful. You almost sat on Zoe.
Her teacup elephant peeks above the cushion. My apologies, I say. She eyes me. Zoe rubs her tiny trunk along my dress ribbons. I catch the warm little trunk like a worm, and it wraps around my finger. Her grey colour is beautiful, unlike the gris. Rich and deep like ocean stones. The teacup elephant scratches her blue painted nails on my dress and flashes me the chrysanthemum flower on her belly. I rub it and she makes a happy sound.
Zoe!
Sophia calls, and the little pet turns away from me, stretching her trunk in the opposite direction.
Leave Camellia alone. She has to join the glorious conversation.
The little creature flops down on a nearby cushion, her legs splaying in all directions. A strong wind whooshes against the canopy. The heat lanterns hiss and crackle and send the scent of woody charcoal through the pavilion. Gabrielle steals Claudine's pastry, poking at her waist. Henrietta Marie sits in the far corner with her nose in a book. Sange bats the heat lantern ribbons.
We were just arguing about whether I should have you change Auguste's dreadful manner if I decide to choose him,
Sophia says. He laughs, then looks at me, trying to make eye contact. I stare into my lap.
You could do that, right?
She asks. Yes, Your Highness, I say, keeping my answers clipped.
Could you make him into a bumbling fool?
I gather you already think I am that, he teases.
Maybe,
Sophia turns back to me.
Could you make him obey my every command?
Our aim is to enhance, Your Highness. The first arcana is meant to refine one's natural disposition, or help one develop his or her talents so that he or she may meet their goals. I sound exactly how Du Barry wants me to. A parrot. A tool ready to be used. Sometimes one's demeanour can become an obstacle for them. Our eyes meet. Hers grow wide with a mix of curiosity and intrigue. Maybe if I had been successful in changing her manner, her mother would trust her to be queen.
What type of disposition should I choose for him? Definitely get rid of the ego. The arrogance, though cute at times, must be lessened.
She ticks off each thing on her fingers.
Girls, what do you think?
Camellia could make him humbler,
Gabrielle says.
Sweeter,
Henrietta Marie offers, barely glancing up from her book. He wiggles his cravat as if it's too tight around his neck, then smiles at each girl.
Claudine,
Sophia says. She glances up from a tray of tarts. Her eyes are puffy and bloodshot.
No opinion.
Sophia scoffs.
She's in a bad mood, Gabrielle says, rolling her eyes.
Shut up, Gabrielle, Claudine snaps.
Gabrielle continues.
The second suitor you set her up with has refused to go on a date with her. She's been eating her feelings all morning. I will outlaw bad moods, especially for my ladies of honour, when I am queen.
Sophia picks over the trays of cherry puffs, honey tarts, macarons, and petit cakes. I glare at her. You'll never be queen.
Regent queen, Claudine corrects.
Sophia's hand freezes before her mouth. A peach macaron falls into her lap.
Completely unnecessary, Gabrielle says, and rude.
Well, won't you just be a regent queen? Will you get to change laws?
Claudine softens her voice.
I wasn't trying to be rude. I was just saying, ignore me. I'm having a bad day. I misspoke.
The tent goes silent, the kind of quiet that's laced with lightning and heat and thunder.
thank you for reminding me that I will never be queen on account of my sister,
Sophia snaps, her voice booming.
I'm,
Claudine stammers out, a deep blush climbing through her entire body. Why don't you leave, Claudine? Gabrielle says.
Fine.
Claudine stumbles to her feet.
Sophia, I didn't mean to be...
Gabrielle puts a hand in the air.
You're making it worse.
Claudine storms out. I wish I could leave with her. Gabrielle reaches over to Sophia and strokes her hair.
Now that she's gone, maybe we can all actually have some fun.
Sophia's frown softens. Sange kisses her cheek and feeds her a grape. Zoe lets out a little trumpet noise.
Could you make someone ugly?
Gabrielle asks me, which brings a sick smile to Sophia's face.
That was my next question, Sophia says.
You made me give Astrid Pompadour a pig nose. I think that was rather ugly.
The table bursts with laughter.
Except for August. He tenses.
It wasn't that bad, Sophia says, and I hear that she's had it corrected.
Oh, has she? I ask.
Yes, even though I gave instructions to all the tea houses to refuse treatment to her, someone has disobeyed me.
Maybe she went to La Maison Rouge,
Henrietta Marie suggests tentatively. Servants rush in to clear plates and refresh drinks and set down more savoury bites and sweet treats. Sophia grabs the arm of the nearest servant. The woman is startled and drops a glass. It shatters on the ground.
Leave it,
Sophia says.
It's fine.
She turns back to me.
What if I wanted to test it? See if you can land this woman in the Tatler ugly papers at the end of the year.
The servant squawks with fear. Wouldn't that be wrong, Your Highness? I say. Sophia lets the servant's hand go, and the woman races from the tent.
You must be very tired, Camellia. Maybe that's why you're not in a pleasant mood either.
She glares at me.
We should all retire to our rooms.
I stand, more than happy to make my escape.
Not you, Camellia. Not yet. Linger behind a moment.
I freeze mid-step. August hovers in the tent's doorway. His eyes find mine finally. They hold questions and concerns. I glance away.
Will you walk with me, Your Highness? Another snowstorm is coming in a few hours. I'd love to catch the first flakes, August says.
No,
she snaps. He looks crestfallen.
Leave. Camellia and I have business to attend to.
As you wish.
He bows, looks at me one last time, then ducks out of the tent. The table clears and her ladies of honour kiss her and exit. Sophia rises from her seat and plucks one of the cream tarts from a tiered dessert platter. She takes small nibbles. Just like her teacup monkey Sange, the cherries stain her lips red. Sweat slicks my skin. I gnaw at my bottom lip. Anger bubbles up inside me, threatening to boil over.
I am a princess,
she says.
I will be a regent queen.
She fixes her gaze on me.
Did they teach that to you?
I don't answer. I don't look at her. I stare straight ahead. She walks over and stands so close to me that with each breath I take, I inhale a mix of her flowery perfume and the tart she just consumed.
You are to answer my questions, she spits.
Yes, Your Highness. I know you will be queen.
Did they teach you what queens do?
Yes, Your Highness.
What did they say?
The Kingdom of Orléans is ruled by queens. The crown is passed down through the women of your family. Queens ensure the proper governance of the kingdom and maintenance of its well-being. She leans in so close she could kiss me if she wanted to.
Wrong.
The word pelts my face. I refuse to move a muscle.
Queens do whatever they please.
Sage dances along the ground, then climbs up her skirts and perches on her shoulder. He pets her now flushed cheeks and kisses her several times. She blows him a kiss in return. A servant enters the tent, toting a clearing tray.
Leave at once, Sophia barks, and do not come in again until you're sent for.
The servant cowers away. I maintain a blank expression. I am not afraid of you. Sage covers his face with his hands.
Did you see how quickly she followed orders? How she didn't question me? They were supposed to teach you that. Dubarry was supposed to teach you to have reverence and respect for your queen.
But you aren't the queen, I say, not yet. And you won't be if I have anything to do with it. Sophia rushes close again.
What did you say?
I crane my face away from hers. She takes hold of my chin, forcing me to look her in the eyes. Her pupils flash with rage. Sage peeks out at me from behind her towering hair. She runs her fingers over my face. I clench my teeth and scowl.
Don't move.
She continues over my lips, down my neck, my chest and arms. She lifts my right hand in the air.
You really should have a moon manicure. I'll have my nail attendant do one for you. When I am regent queen, I will mandate it. Even for bells. Everything about a person should be beautiful.
Her grip tightens around my hand, and her jewel-tipped nails dig into the skin. I cry out and try to pull away.
I told you not to move,
she grits her teeth.
Don't move, Belle, or I'll break your hand. A Belle with a broken hand won't be a very good Belle. Certainly not the favourite Belle. Perhaps I'll tell my mother that we need to name a new favourite again, just like I did with Ambrosia. I bet one of your sisters would gladly take your place. Hannah, perhaps? Or Valeria? She cried after the Belle assignments were announced. Maybe I'll choose Ambrosia again. Bring her back for another round.
She tightens her grip on my hand. I double over in pain. The pressure, heat, swelling, a popping sensation. My other fist balls up. I try to shove at her. She's a solid block in front of me and just squeezes harder. Sophia turns her head but doesn't loosen her grip.
Zoe, dear.
The little teacup elephant peeks out from beneath the thick tablecloth. Only her trunk shows.
Zoe, my sweet dear, come out.
She inches forward, eyes down and little feet twitching. Even she's afraid.
Please leave. I don't want you to see this. Wait for me near the tent.
The elephant turns and trots off.
Sage!
Sophia looks up at him.
You too. Stay with Zoe.
Sage leaps down from Sophia's shoulder and scampers off. Sophia smiles at me with soft lips, the corner of her mouth lifting. It's the smile from every single portrait, painting, newspaper, tatler and scandal sheet.
See, even they know how to obey.
I seethe.
Don't ever disobey me.
I clench my teeth.
Did you hear me?
I press my lips together. She clamps down harder until I cry out again. Yes, I heard you.
Yes, what?
Yes, Your Highness. She twists my wrist even tighter.
You owe me an apology. Princesses aren't treated in this way.
I'm sorry, Your Highness.
I don't believe you.
I swear, Your Highness, I'm sorry. Finally, she releases me. I stumble back, cradling my hand. Sophia leans in and kisses my nose, then calls for servants.
Summon her personal guard. Tell him there's been a small accident. The poor Camille must be taken to the palace infirmary at once. Alert the royal doctor.
Yes, Your Highness. the woman says and disappears. Another servant drapes Sophia's shoulders with a white floor-length coat, and she's led from the tent.